Now, the BBC and other broadcasters, even Facebook, are beefing up their fact-checking during the election because of the rise of fake news.
Young people are growing up in a world where pseudo-fact, rumour and downright invention are presented as the truth. So, what can be done about it? Well, we've had a few ideas.
From warnings of fake news during the French presidential election campaign to Donald Trump in America.
Fake, phony, fake.
Knowing what to believe is becoming more and more difficult these days.
I said something about Donald Trump leaving his cabinet.
Fake news.
And then I deleted it because I realised it wasn't real.
Fake or misleading stories spread like wildfire thanks to social media and the click of a button.
When I see something funny, I just share it because if it makes me laugh and everything, then it's going to make all this happen.
You like the sense of attention because people think, where did you get that from and stuff?
A lot of people are sharing it thinking it is real, like on our Facebook, that's why it pops up on our newsfeed.
And accepting what we read without question may be a particular problem for young people.
It seems that more than a third of school children are quoting fake news as fact in class and in homework, according to a survey of teachers who've raised concerns that young people are struggling to tell the difference between what's real and what's not.
So we've invited pupils from Cedar Mount Academy in Manchester to the Museum of Science and Industry to test their ability to read some of the latest news stories with a critical eye. Helping us out is Alistair Reed, a Press Association journalist who specialises in social media.
Where is this fake news coming from? What's the point of fake news?
Sometimes it's just people who are sharing something that they believe is true. You know, it's just a mistake, like everyone makes mistakes. Sometimes it can be people who want to make money, so they make something up which people will share or believe and share with their friends, and that gets them advertising revenue. And sometimes there are people who really want to push a political or social agenda, and that's the more dangerous part of it.
We're going to show our pupils a selection of news headlines and pictures, then ask one very simple question. Which ones would they share, believing them to be true?
Real Siberian unicorn remains found. What do you think, true or false? Stick your hand up if you think it's true. Stick your hand up if you think it's false. So everyone thinks that false. Next one, from WhatsApp, with someone sharing a video that says hawk drops snake on family barbecue.
Quick,
put your hand up if you think it's true. Last one, the so-called judicial branch in this country should not be allowed to overrule the president of America. Very unfair, lawsuit is coming. Is this a real Trump tweet?
Up until today, many are prepared to trust these stories without any idea whether they're real or not. But will they change their minds once Alistair has given them a few tips and tools for spotting lies? First up, check who else is reporting the story.
You would think that the BBC or the Guardian or the Mail or the Sun, if that was really happening, they would have a story about it, right? And it wouldn't just be on some random website that you don't know.
Another good tip is to check the web address.
The website might look like the BBC, but if it's got a weird URL web address, then that's going to be a fake website.
Finally, take a closer look at the pictures, and if in doubt...
If you're using some browsers, you can just right-click, go search Google for image, and it will do a search for that image on the database and show you if it's come up somewhere before.
Armed with their newfound knowledge, could the pupils now spot stories that are not worth sharing? First up, the story of a hawk dropping a snake on a family barbecue.
Well, the Telegraph report.
Oh, debunked. So that could be like, that it's confirmed as a hoax.
Next, what do they think of the Donald Trump tweet?
First up, we found out this is a real, because it says real Donald Trump, and that's not his name. So we thought, well, that seems a bit dodgy. And he hasn't got a verification tick.
Their teacher Laura recognises there's a problem with pupils sharing fake news and often discusses it with them.
We want them to have an idea of what is true and what isn't. And they're on their phones all the time, you know, and it's not, obviously, not many of them are going to be buying newspapers, that's where they get their news from.
Right, time's up. Let's see how they got on.
A hawk drops a snake on a family barbecue. It was completely false. It was just made up.
When I seen it, I was like, oh, I thought this was real because it wasn't YouTube or on other sites and that, so that kind of did surprise me the most.
The Siberian unicorn, was this true? Yeah, you're right, it's true.
We just have to look at the different facts, side of things, we actually researched and everything, and we actually found out that it was real, and it's quite surprising.
Is this a real Donald Trump tweet? as you rightly spotted, it's a parody, it's a joke.
So at the end of the day, what do our pupils feel they've learnt?
Well, the tools were quite helpful to like kind of check if it was actual fact or just a hoax.
Oh, if something's fake, or if I'm worried that something's fake, I'll find out before I share it.
Well, lots of food for thought there, but of course, Prime Minister, politicians, I mean, they have a major responsibility in this as well. As soon as
prayer. May the words of my lips and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Okay, fake news, alternative facts and post-truth. I'm not an expert on this. I've read a couple of books this week, one of which has been hanging around for a long time. The post-truth bit, I've done a lot of reading on in the past, I guess. Monday or Tuesday, we will actually post the talk. With that, we'll put a document that has got most of my references, probably enough to keep you going for a couple of years in terms of reading some newspaper references as well. So as I go through, you'll be able to see where we are. This is a sort of catch-up. We've had a conversation over the last while, and one of the things that is bugging us at the moment, because Dayspring wants to be out there and involved in real life with everybody else, it fascinates us that in a big piece of research, they've worked out that 20% of people who would not describe themselves as Christians, or active Christians at least, would like to talk about Jesus with somebody they know who is an active Christian. Which is all very well, but those of us in Dayspring think that we are not terribly good at spiritual conversations. And that's particularly an issue because if you think about things like cabaret, the way in which we engage is not by sermon preaching, but by dialed back conversations anyway. So that is the, if you like, the Dayspring reason why we've got to shoehorn this stuff in sometime during the year, and we're doing it today. So the takeaways. What takeaways from today? Takeaway number one, well, I really do hope that it says something to anybody who wants to follow Jesus more closely in more areas of their life, because that's our number one everyday takeaway. Secondly, I'd really like it if you're able to carry on talking about the issues we raised today. I'm no authority. You may decide to disagree with me. That's absolutely fine. Then what I'd like to do is to put some stuff in your minds that means that you could see if people you bump into are happy to talk about these issues as well as other stuff. I know certainly at school, this whole thing about fake news and social media is pretty big. I know that some of you would enjoy perpetuating fake news. I have grandchildren who are sixth formers and university students, and they are well involved in that. And I join in as well because some of the things are funny. Then I'd like us to be sort of extending our thinking to ask questions about what's real. That's something I'm interested in, how we know it. And there's one sort of fact-checking strategy that I want to come to in a particular area that's important at the end. I hope you'll be able to identify it. So, in a way, although they say fake news started with social media, it's been around forever. Who remembers a Sunday paper called The Sunday Sport? I'm not saying who read The Sunday Sport. Nobody ever read it. That's why it only sold a few million. But The Sunday Sport had these really exciting, engaging headlines, like there was a discovery of a statue of the long-dead Elvis Presley on the planet Mars. That got on the front page one Sunday. And then another Sunday was reporters purported to have uncovered a Second World War bomber on the moon. And then there was a London double-decker bus that was dug up at the South Pole. That's the one some of you guys have been sanding down yesterday. And occasionally, the extraterrestrials even came to us, because there was one headline. Now, you've got to think that this was on the newsstands on a Sunday in the 80s, and people bought the paper and discussed it on Monday. The headline was, "Aliens turned our sun into a fish finger." And then, of course, I can remember when I was a really little kid, Tomorrow's World had a famous April Fool's Day. We've all been caught out on those April Fool's press releases, but I think this was the most famous one. Anybody remember Spaghetti Trees? Program about spaghetti trees. Some of it, Sue, you're nodding, you weren't born then. So, because that was 1957. It shows how much it's actually passed into the way we think. But Jesus talked about fake news as well, and this one's a bit more serious. He actually said, "Happy are you when people insult you and persecute you, tell all kinds of evil lies against you because you're my followers. Be happy and glad, for a great reward is kept for you in heaven. This is how the prophets who lived before you were persecuted." Those sort of things, we think persecution's a big deal, but you think of the times that kids go to school and consciously say something about another child that they know is not true. That's been around for a long while. When we started our first church back in the Napoleonic era, it must have been, had a group that started as a theatre group and gradually turned into a church. And I can remember that there was somebody who said that they'd heard that during communion services, we passed a bag round and all spat in it. Yeah? And that was being retailed by people who I'm sure knew that wasn't true. I know they knew, you know, we were a bit odd because we no longer went along to the previous church that we'd been involved in. But I can remember saying to the young person who talked to me about this, "Now, you really know that's not true, don't you?" "Yeah," she said. But she still then went on to tell other people about it as well. So fake news, been around a long while, but there's no doubt about it, it's sort of changed in complexion since since social media's been out there. And there is quite a famous incident, and we'll make a few comments about that. There's another video come up.
In the echo chamber, all the fake news stories from history are rattling around for eternity. An image representing a bit of fake news will emerge from its murky depths. I want you to buzz in and tell me what it isn't. Richard.
An unbalanced game of ice hockey.
Yes.
It's not the bit at Glastonbury when Coldplay say, "And now for something off the new album."
That's definitely not that. Yes, John.
You just looked at me with such disappointment. You didn't even know I was here 5 minutes ago. You just want me to chip in all willy-nilly. It's not my birthday party.
Oh.
It's actually quite a good turnout for a birthday party, to be fair.
Well, it's definitely not white bits of things for people to stand on. Those are people, but they've just got their hoods up.
Let's hear what Donald Trump's press secretary, Sean Spicer, describes it as.
This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period.
Okay.
I mean.
Well, let's have a look at the comparison with the Obama inauguration. And you can see it is different.
Can you? Thank you. So, fake news becomes fake news when people believe it, doesn't it? But one of the things that's really quite appalling is that, as far as we know, that particularly during the US elections, Christians were quite involved in perpetuating fake news. You can have a look at it. It started with people who called themselves evangelicals, which has created a bit of difficulty for those of us who would sort of use that title, because right at the centre of being an evangelical is saying that the cross is really the central thing, that Jesus dying, the Bible's the important standard. Of course, once you get into the Bible, it really becomes quite complicated, because it's very easy to say anything you want out of the Bible. And if you find somebody saying, ah, yeah, but you Christians say that the Bible says that, it's not too difficult to say, well, yeah, it also says this. And I'll come back to that one in a minute because it's interesting. But there is actually, in terms of the religious area, of course, there's a bit of a high cost to this, because people do say all sorts of things. And one of the things that happens is that they say that Christians are always after your money. That's one, isn't it? Now, I can sort of understand that. Wendy and I were out to lunch the other day, and there was a Christian Aid offering going on, you know, Christian Aid collection. And they were not observing the rules for chuggers. They were standing in front of you and saying good morning with their boxes. And I just wish that wouldn't happen, that Christians give the impression, the first contact, the only contact that people make, that they're that people are after your money. Because, you know, it's not really true. The big truth is that something like two-thirds of all charitable volunteers in the UK come from churches. So if you wipe that out, you wipe out most of what goes on. And I was part of a conversation recently where there was a big discussion in a charity about whether money was going to be given to a Christian organisation, because Christian organisations were only interested in converting people. Well, if you thought that what you'd got to say and what God wanted to say to people was going to change their lives and change their forevers, you'd like to communicate that, but it's not really justified, because there's been, but the evidence of this is recently there's been this whacking great European-funded study on the social action of mega churches in London. I went to their report day not so long ago. And one of the things that's come out of it is a real determination on the part of the researchers, it's Birmingham University that done this, to say to government, look, whatever you do, don't say to churches, if we're going to fund you, you must not talk about your faith. For two reasons. Number one, it is faith that gives us the motivation to do what we do. Because if God loves people, then even when people are not very lovable, it gives us an incentive to love them. And second of all, there's no evidence that Christian charities operate on the basis of being conditional. You know, there are all these stories around about the fact that in centres for the homeless, Christians make people listen to a one-hour sermon and pray to receive Christ before they get their lunch. What's that? Fake news. Of course, it means that Christian agencies get denied resources as well. We know something about that, and it's happened with some quite big charities. Andy could tell you the detail without telling you the names of the charities that have turned us down. We would hope that would change as the years go on. But there's all sorts of ways in which fake news happens. Probably one of the most amusing recent ones is that Andy posted early this morning a thing from Theresa May, and actually had to say at the top, did you say, I hope this, you know, I don't know whether this is true. And I was able to use the techniques they've been teaching to those secondary school kids to check, and check that it was in the Independent and in one or two other places, which is why I was nearly late for the meeting this morning.
Is it true?
Yeah, it was on our Facebook.
Okay. Well, apparently it's in the Independent as well, although that doesn't always guarantee it, because sometimes newspapers pick up fake news. But of course, the big thing that's come out of here, and this is where it does start to get really interesting, is the idea of alternative facts. You remember how that phrase arose, alternative facts? Let's have a look at the time that, I think this was the first time the phrase was used.
And you did not answer the question.
I did answer your question.
No, you did not. You did not answer the question of why the president asked the White House press secretary to come out in front of the podium for the first time and utter a falsehood. Why did he do that? It undermines the credibility of the entire White House press office on day one.
No, it doesn't. Don't be so overly dramatic about it, Chuck. You're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that. But the point remains.
Wait a minute. Alternative facts? Alternative facts, four of the five facts he uttered. The one thing he got right was Zeke Miller. Four of the five facts he uttered were just not true. Look, alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods.
That's, I'll give you the link to that one. That's quite good fun. Sometimes, of course, alternative facts are just lies. There's a bit in the Bible that some of you will know. When Paul and Silas went to a place called Philippi, there was a girl who had been trafficked, she was making a lot of money for her owners by foretelling the future, and this was because of demonic influence. And what happened was that Paul and Silas came along, and she was shouting after them and so on, and in the end they turned round and they just said a few words of command and the girl was healed and chilled and doing okay. The problem was that she no longer made any money for the guys who were traffickers. And it says, when her owners realised that their chance of making money was gone, they seized Paul and Silas and dragged them to the authorities in the public square. They brought them before the Roman officials and said, these men are Jews, they're causing trouble in our city, they're teaching customs that are against our law, we are Roman citizens and we cannot accept these customs or practice them. And the crowd joined in the attacks against Paul and Silas. The rest of you probably know, the rest of it you probably can remember. Now it's interesting to think, were these guys convinced that talking about Jesus was against Roman law? Were these alternative facts they were putting in? Were they falsehoods? You know, we're thinking about buying a new car at the moment, and it is giving us brain ache. It really is. Because every time you sit down with a car dealer and you talk about the latest reports on particulate emissions and what government's going to do, they start in on their stories with a bunch of alternative facts, and you go away nodding and you think, oh yeah, perhaps we should buy diesel. And then you get home and you look at the RAC Trust and you look at other reports you think, no, not. But we've got no confidence that the next dealer we sit down with isn't going to be able to bamboozle us in just the same way. And it's strange, isn't it, because people end up going with what they would prefer to go with anyway. One example of this that I can think of at the moment, excuse me telling this particular story again, but I was talking to a couple recently. I talked to the wife first for about an hour, recorded her story, then I talked to the husband. And central to the story of how this couple became Christians was the fact there were a whole lot of difficult processes in their life. And one of the most difficult centered around their third daughter, who was born and wasn't reacting quite right to the things going on around her. And so they took her for some checks, got sent on to the hospital, and they found this little girl was blind. Now, the diagnosis was clear. She went away. And like churches do, in small groups. They prayed for her. At this time, the wife is an active Christian. The husband is determined, as he said to me, nobody was going to talk me into being a Christian. He'd made up his mind. He's a great guy, really sort of easygoing. And you could just imagine letting all this stuff pour over him. And they're praying away. And then they went back to the hospital after about 3 months. And the doctors did the checks again, called somebody else in, did the checks again. And of course, the mother was thinking, oh no, there's a tumour, there's something here. And they said, look, I'm awfully sorry, I know what we've said, but your daughter can see. Okay. Now, the wife was absolutely exultant about this. The husband, oh yeah, just one of those things. Got to be a coincidence. You know, we're pretty good at this. We take hold of the things that we would like to believe, that we prefer to believe. First time I came across this was when I was a teenager and was talking to friends at school. And there was some pretty strong evidence I had about healing, and put it in front of a guy. And I can remember talking to him and saying, well, Mike, what do you think about this? Now, he said, I'm not interested, and just pushed it off to one side. I remember later on when I was a university student, sitting chatting with a guy who was in the same digs as I was. I can remember in beads, caftan, all sorts. He was chairman of the German society. He was much more sophisticated than I was. And from about 10 at night till about 2 in the morning, we went through a conversation. And the conversation went like this. No, I can't believe, I can't believe, I can't believe, I won't believe. Yeah? It happens time and time and time again. Now, it always did happen. And there's a fascinating bit in the Bible that I really, really like. This is the bit about, now my soul is troubled. I've been skipping around all over the place. Sorry, Jonathan. You might be able to find it. Anyway, I'll carry on talking. Now my soul is troubled, Jesus said, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. Now it's for this very reason I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name. Jesus sort of muttering stuff. And then it says something that's really interesting here. Then a voice came from heaven. I've glorified your name. And will glorify. I've glorified my name and will glorify it again. The crowd that was heard there, were there and heard it, said that it thundered. Others said an angel had spoken to him. Listen to this one, guys. God speaks. Some people must have heard God's voice. Some people thought it was an angel. Some people said, just thunder. Just like that guy that I knew. Actually, a few years later, he did come to faith, but the baby's healing had nothing to do with it. It's just that at work he saw coincidence after coincidence after coincidence, and the fact that he didn't kill himself when he picked up a live mains wire had more influence on him than his baby getting healed. So, go figure. Final video. I think we've just about got a chance to watch this one and make a quick comment on it, and then I want to come to my conclusion. Let's see this last one.
This is an important issue, though, for your voters. I mean, I asked you three times, did you think homosexuality was a sin? And you said, we're all sinners.
I really feel sorry for Tim Farron. I think the ultimate reason why it's really difficult to become a politician. He was trying to be really honest when he said, we are all sinners. Now, you know that rather than being people who think they're good and everybody else is wrong, the biggest problem for Christians, which is why we're running the Freedom in Christ course at the moment, is that Christians have a habit more than other people of saying, oh dear, I'm dreadful. I'm so dreadful that God cannot love me. Yeah? And suddenly you've got people like Sue Perkins and the people on the news becoming theologians. And they start asking about sin. And what do you think about sin? And you have no right to talk about sin. So the issue wasn't about gay sex. The issue was about whether anybody has a right to disagree with comedians who want to be theologians. That's what it ended up as. He said, we're all sinners. The idea that we're all sinners is something that nobody wants to hear. What they want to hear instead is that nobody's a sinner. And of course, if you come to it and think through where this all leads us, it does actually bring us back to this issue of the cross, because if nobody's a sinner, then why did the cross matter? Just recently, when Stephen Fry was in Ireland, he was interviewed and he was asked what he would say to God if he had a chance. Good question. Might use that at cabaret next time. And he said, I'd say bone cancer in children. What's that about? It's not right. It's utterly, utterly evil. The God who created this universe, if it was created by God, is quite clearly a maniac, an utter maniac, totally selfish. We have to spend our lives on our knees thanking him. What kind of God would do that? Now, somebody tried to get him prosecuted for blasphemy, which apparently is still on the statute book in Ireland. But there are bits of that that, of course, sort of emerge in the Psalms, don't they? And it's a question that most of us face from time to time. Given that God is said to be a God of love, how can suffering exist? But I was looking yesterday, I was reading a novel, just getting to the end of it, and there's a little bit where a woman says to her boyfriend, it says she'd asked him if he ever looked at all the pain and suffering in the world and wondered how God could let it happen. It was an old chestnut, the thing every vicar was asked. Do you ever look at the pain and suffering of Christ on the cross, he had replied, and wonder how God could let that happen to himself? So there was a question to ask God. How could you let that happen when you look at the cross? And of course, that's the difference between somebody who has a Christian view of truth and somebody who doesn't. That they look at the cross and they see that it's real. And because they look at the cross, they also look at Jesus. My very last quote, please, a short one. You see, here's my fact checker. If somebody says God is like this, or why do you believe in a God who is like that, you can check whether it's the right picture of God or not by looking at Jesus. Because Jesus actually said, if you've seen me, you've seen God. And I know there are times in my life when I think, oh God, what are you up to? What's going on here? But then if I look at Jesus, which of course is what Bethany was starting into this morning, it begins to alter the picture. It begins to make things very different. Well, I hope that started a conversation, raised some questions, and that it will all come together over lunchtime. Please let me know where I'm wrong. I'm sure I am in some bits. Thanks.